evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I've brought along my special friend.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Well, I just love having you, Richard. Welcome. Thank you. And I have to say, tonight the radio waves should be sparkling with excitement, because tonight we have an individual that you might kind of say I cut my teeth on the mystical in the very beginning of my career, and I know a lot of other people do too. And this beautiful being who has agreed to be with us tonight is Edgar Cayce. So get your questions ready. I know I have a lot of them, and I hope we can bring forth as much as possible during this very short hour. And so he was known as the Sleeping Prophet, and he made a lot of predictions. And so we're going to be talking about some of that, what makes predictions come forth and why some don't come forth. So, Richard, if you would be kind enough, wait a minute, before we get to that, I would like to say that if you know how we work, all of you want to connect with the Sleeping Prophet. Perhaps you know what he looks like. And if you know what Edgar Cayce looked like, put a picture of that, of him, in your third eye. Call upon him, Edgar Cayce, and you should be feeling in your heart center those energies that Richard feels. I know you'll be closer to him. So, Richard, tell us what you are feeling when you connect with Mr. Cayce.
My experience is energy very centrally. It is just a love energy. Is there any way I can describe it? It is purely and simply a love energy. And in a sense, that doesn't do it justice, because there are many expressions of love. And I wouldn't describe his energy as being particularly powerful, though it's strong. But what sets it apart, perhaps, is this almost dancing-like quality to the love. Now, you might think that sounds a little like what I was describing with John Lennon, but it really is quite different. I mentioned that experience of the fairy dancing, almost the devilment almost of John Lennon, was right out on the left side. This is part of the love energy that I'm experiencing with Mr. Cayce. It is just this beautiful, vibrant, vital, almost sparkling love energy is how I describe it. It's a beautiful energy, very clear, very clean, very, in a way, deceptively simple, but there is this, what you might describe as subtle complexity. Very interesting energy.
Thank you, Richard. The first thing that struck me was the simplicity of the gentleman. What you saw, as they say, is what you got. He wasn't deceptive with people in any way. I can just sense this straightforwardness with him.
Yes, I agree.
As you say, beautiful. And he is here, and he has a message for our listeners. And Richard, if you'd be kind enough to bring forth his message, I would just be so grateful.
I'm most interested to see what he has to say. I firstly wish to say that I appreciate this opportunity to come forth. And I appreciate it for many reasons. Firstly, as others have said, it is perhaps a unique opportunity to come forth in this manner, in a public forum, and be heard when one has left this dimension for a considerable number of years of your time. And so it is both an honor and a privilege. But more than that, I am excited to be here because whilst it was not something that was understood in my time, or frankly, did I understand when I was incarnate, I now understand that the reason that I came forth in that time really was to prepare for this time. Let me explain what I mean. Firstly, I am one of that cherubim group that have come forth in support of this mission. And you might consider me one of the foreguards, you might say, that came forth early to do some preparatory work. When I came forth, there was not a lot of acceptance of the notion of such things as reincarnation or Atlantis, or indeed the ability to bring information forth from the other side of the veil or in a trance-like state that had credibility, you might say. And today, people remember me primarily for my prophecy, you might say, the things that I had to say about what would unfold in the world and the existence of Atlantis and so on, when really most of my work had nothing to do with this. My most successful work was working with patients who, for the most part, I had never seen, who usually wrote me a letter of some sort explaining a little of what was happening to them. And I would go into a trance-like state and bring forth an analysis of their condition and a proposed solution to their condition. And those proposed solutions, the healing approach, worked with a very high level of success. And so it was this day-to-day work that I did, and I did thousands upon thousands of these readings, these diagnoses and recommendations for healing. These, for the most part, brought forth the results that the individuals were looking for. And really, that was the heart of the work that I was doing. At one point, I increased the number of healing sessions, you might call them, to 8 per day. And I was advised to cut back. But I wanted to help as many people as possible. And as was warned to me, it contributed to my death. But it really was that day-to-day experience of people, of the results of what I was doing, that had the greatest impact at the time. It caused people's opinions and beliefs and understandings to shift, particularly in the United States. And the work that I did not only impacted those who I brought forth the diagnosis and so on for, but indeed their immediate families and beyond. And so it was like this ripple effect. And as I stand where I now stand, I can see how that rippled out and impacted so many people. What is not recognized is that the key part of what I was doing in that trance state, and I did not have conscious awareness of this, but because I was a cherubim, I could access their Akashic records. And indeed, those cherubim that take care of those Akashic records would work with me in that state. And so, as many of you will understand, illness and disease has connections with past life negative karma. And so these health issues that these people were bringing forth were part of their life plan and was related to the past. And so a lot of the information and understandings that I was bringing forth were flowing from their Akashic records. And this is not so well understood. And so I wanted to take a moment to explain some of those things, because as I began to say, I have come to realize that the key reason that I came into the world when I did was to sow seeds, to begin a shift in the consciousness of humanity, to begin to open a doorway for people to consider the possibilities that my work confronted them with, that there was a reality beyond their experience that had many possibilities and a great deal of power. And so this really was my key work. And indeed, when I attempted to use my skills for other purposes, to, for example, forecast market directions and so on, I would have to say I was spectacularly unsuccessful, because that was not the purpose of the work. And yes, surrounding that key work, as you are aware, some of the readings saw me bring forth understandings and information which firstly related to people's past lives in Atlantis, and secondly, in some cases, brought forth some predictions. And as Carolyn mentioned, I wanted to make some comments about some of those predictions and the nature of prediction or prophecy. And I will simply go to where I know others have gone in the past, and that is this distinction, when one looks at the future, of possibility and probability. Possibility covers the entire range of things that might conceivably happen, and that is a very broad range indeed. And as one gets closer in time, some of those possibilities, you might say, harden, become more likely. And so as the time frame shortens, the probability on certain examples of those possibilities firm up, you might say, and so when they move into probability, it becomes more likely. But even though it might be probable, it does not mean that it will unfold. You see, there are many, many threads that point into the future, you could say. It is a little like a tree with its limbs and its little twigs and leaves and so on. As you move further along, so you branch off into all these myriad of possibility, myriad of leaves. And so prophecy is a little like this. Now, when prophecy is somewhat overridden, you might say, is where the individual who is living out that prophecy is aware of the prophecy and in some cases takes steps to ensure that that prophecy unfolds. And we saw that with, for example, Yeshua's life, where he chose to undertake particular steps, you might say, triggered particular events which were intended by him to fulfill ancient, or in some cases more recent, prophecy related to his coming forth. And so you can certainly have that, you might say, proactive implementation of prophecy. But for the most part, the things that I was discussing did not fall into that kind of category. And so some of the things that I forecast have not come forth, just as some of the things that Nostradamus' forecast have not come forth. That is the nature of prophecy. It is not an accurate forecast. Now, I will say that overlying this, you might say, is the action of major cycles of time, major boundaries. For example, most of you, or at least some of you, will have heard of the notion of the cycles of Brahma. These are what you might consider the in-breath and the out-breath of all there is in the center of the cosmos. And so with each cycle of Brahma, which has its own objectives and plans and so on, to investigate particular forms and expressions of consciousness, you might say to investigate particular possibilities, so it is that consciousness begins to expand. And that cycle is opened up by that one that you know of as Marietta, and the souls come forth once more from all there is and take up their roles and begin to implement the missions that they have taken on for this round of Brahma. And so you have the outbreath where you have the expansion process, which lasts for impossibly long periods of time in your terms, until the moment is reached when that expansion ceases and the in-breath begins, the process of drawing all of creation back. And this date that is approaching, this December 21st, 2012, is positioned to be on that moment when the out-breath ends and the in-breath begins. It is no accident that this is so. And I mention this because the cycles of Brahma are perhaps the most extreme and inviolate examples of cycle boundaries that simply are not transgressed. And there are many lesser cycles than this that are not transgressed. An example of that is the transition in consciousness that awaits you at the end of this year and a little beyond. This transition will occur regardless of who on planet Earth decides to participate in it. It is that simple. It is a boundary which is drawn. And people talk about free will of humanity, and indeed that is an appropriate notion. However, what most people do not understand is that free will is allowed within the boundaries of major cycles. In other words, human beings do not have a choice about participating in the transition that occurs at the end of this year. Yes, they have a choice about whether they participate in the ascension process or whether they do not, but that is the scope of the choice. And some might say, hang on a minute, humanity has free will, they can choose to do what they like. And yes, they can choose to participate in that transition or not, but that is the scope of the choice. And for most, that choice has already been made at a soul level, though that does not mean it cannot be changed. And so I draw these broader brushstrokes for you so you can begin to understand the context for prophecy. And so some of the things that I brought forth information about that may unfold in the world have proven to be accurate and some not. And that is the nature of that process. People should not be surprised by that for the reasons that I've just spoken about. And they are surprised because they don't understand the processes that are being discussed. Unfortunately, people's misunderstanding of these things has also meant that they have used this where it suited them to discredit what I brought forth in regard to Atlantis, that is, the existence of Atlantis, not its rediscovery before now, which is one of those things that I forecast that has not unfolded. And so These are perhaps the key things that I wished to cover before I open myself for your questions.
That's beautiful. And I thank you so much for coming forth with these very articulate descriptions of prophecy and boundaries, and we thank you for that. While I ask Mr. Casey some questions of my own, I would like to invite the audience to call in with your questions, because this time is going to pass by very quickly. Don't wait to the end to try and get in with your questions. Call in now. I have several people who have asked this question, Mr. Casey, and this is about David Wilcox. And people want to know if he is an incarnation sent forth by your monad.
I am aware that this question has been raised, and indeed David is of the view that he is, in fact, a reincarnation of me. And certainly there are some strong pointers to indicate that that may be so. But in fact, it is not so. The truth of the matter is that David is an incarnated creator god. He is one of those that played a role in the creation of this planet and agreed to come forth to assist in the preparation at this time. He does indeed have a connection with me. He carries my template. Some of you will understand what templates are, and I will take a moment to explain it quickly. And I will simply say that a template is what you might consider to be the experiences, in a broad sense, of a soul that has incarnated previously. And the reason that a soul will choose a particular template, and indeed they can choose more than one, but typically only one, the reason for choosing that template is for the rapid progression of that soul. You may understand that humanity lived much longer lives than has been the case since the fall in Atlantis. And by comparison with other incarnations, you might say, elsewhere in the cosmos, 40 years and 20, as it is spoken of, is very short. And so this limits the time window in which a soul can gather experience. Of course, as most of you listening to this will understand, that coming into this consciousness, you are shorn of your memories and so many of your skills and abilities. And this is a way of bringing forth a lot of those skills and abilities into your lifetime quickly. And so these are the key reasons for bringing forth a template. And David brought forth a very complete template. People don't understand that the scope of experience that a template can involve can even include physical attributes, which is certainly the case with David. David has noted, and others have noted, the similarity in David's looks to my own. This is no accident. It is part of the template. And the key reason that David brought that template forth was to foster his intuitive abilities, his psychic abilities, his abilities to connect with communication, you might say, from the other side. And he has done this very well, as many of you well know. It was also to encourage him and to assist him in, you might say, looking beyond the mundane, looking beyond the day-to-day, so he would begin to connect with his mission. And I have to say that David has connected with his mission in an extremely powerful and effective way, and he's done it with great integrity. And so his use of my template has been extremely successful. But he is not an incarnation of my soul. He is not a cherubim as I am. But he chose that template for the reasons that I have described, and I'm sure his monad is very pleased with the results that have come forth as a result of him choosing my template.
Such a complete answer to the question. Thank you so much, Mr. Casey. We're going to take some callers' questions. Raphael on line 3. Welcome, Raphael.
Hi, this is Raphael. Hi. Thank you very much for coming forth and able to talk with us, Mr. Casey. And my question is to do with my son. His name is Ramon, and he just was a few days ago analyzed with a tumor growth in his back and his spine, and he's doing surgery next week. And I'd like to know if he could be healed spiritually before that, and if not, is the surgery going to go through and is going to be healed well?
Well, as a parent, I can understand your question. Did you hear the question, Richard?
Yes. The issue of health issues such as this. Raphael, could you please turn off your microphone? I cannot do this work with you speaking.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, I could hear in background, and it doesn't work when I'm hearing whatever it was in the background.
Only the telephone.
And so the issues of health conditions coming forth, as I mentioned earlier, has connections to past life karmic matters. And in some cases, it can simply be for the purpose of experience. That might sound a little strange, but by experience, I mean bringing forth awareness and understandings and connections to past life issues. And in the case of your son, this indeed is the case. And I am not here to bring forth healing for your son. I know that is what you wish, but that is not my purpose here. And I will say that the journey that he has chosen in regard to this issue needs to be played out, and it will be. And it will challenge him, but he will survive it. And that, as a parent, is the key thing that you need to be comfortable with, is that he will survive this process. And, of course, as you...
Let him finish. Raphael, please. You're speaking, and, yes, and we're trying to bring forth the message. Please wait.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Richard. Have you lost the connection, Richard?
I have lost the connection. I'm just trying to get it back.
Okay.
I think the conversation about that is gone. Whatever was in that has gone.
We're sorry, Raphael. When people speak and he's bringing forth a message, it breaks the communication between Richard and in this case, Edgar Casey. And we're sorry we can't bring more other than he did say that he will survive. And as a parent, that's what you want to know. We're sorry we can't bring forth more. We're going to go to line 4 to take Debbie's question. Debbie, welcome. What is your question, dear?
You could tell me if my soul chose to ascend at this time, and when we ascend, do we leave everything behind?
you hear that, Richard?
Yes.
Thank you.
Debbie, I encourage you to take the time to visit the 2012 Countdown website that these two have put together, which explains a great deal by way of what is involved in this process, to watch the videos that are posted to that site, to a page of YouTube videos, will give you some key understandings. And so I will not repeat that content here. However, what I will say is, as I said earlier, regardless of what your soul choice is, you can choose differently in this dimension. And it is clear to me that it is your intention to participate in ascension. And that, dear one, is the end of the conversation. You've made the choice. And that is the end of it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Debbie. And thank you, Richard, for bringing that forth, and Mr. Casey also. Now, on line one is a gentleman by the name of Barry. Barry, welcome. What is your question?
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you, Edgar Casey, for coming forth. I understand that there are some readings you did regarding people that are born with birthmarks. I'm just wondering, is the birthmark on the side of my face related to a past life? And what is the relevance in this life?
Birthmarks very often relate to past life experiences. There are many ways that humanity, or indeed an individual human being, chooses to map their life based on the connections and the understandings that they are prompted to connect with from the past. Few remember in this life that most of the details of their lives are mapped before they ever come. And when you accept this, you begin to look at your life a little differently. You begin to examine why you react to things in a particular way. Why did you choose the parents, the siblings that you chose? Why did you choose them? What relevance are they for your understanding? If it has been a difficult family, why did you choose that family? When you start to ask these questions, these understandings begin to come forth. And birthmarks are really prompts for the individual to ask about that connection. Why would I bring this forth in my experience? Why would I, you might say, expose myself to the, for many, mental torture of having a significant birthmark? And it is because, on a soul level, you chose to give yourself a reminder that would be very difficult to ignore. And this is what has happened in your case. You wanted to ensure that you connected with that question at the very least. Why would I do this? What is the reason behind it? And as you do this, it prompts you to begin to look inwards and search for understanding. And so this birthmark for you was simply a trigger to begin to ask those questions. And I will say to you that as you pass through the rejuvenation process, when it comes forth, that mark will disappear as the perfection of the physical form comes forth for all of those who will participate in the ascension process. And it will occur in the coming months for all those who participate in this process. So it seems to me that you're bringing it forth. Your soul's choice has been well served, because you would not be on this phone call asking me this question if you had not begun to open your spiritual understanding. And so it is.
Thank you, Barry, for your question. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Casey. Thank you.
I would like to insert a question of mine right now. And would Mr. Casey give me or give us some of his understanding of the March equinox for next year?
The March equinox of next year really needs to be looked at in the context of all that is unfolding between now and then. And I am aware that the two of you and many that have worked with you and listened to your work have been expecting to see evidence of these changes coming forth by now, in particular evidence of the rejuvenation of the physical form. And as has been explained to the two of you, and as a result, to some degree, some of those listening, that in a way, the cycles of attempting to bring forth a golden age or ascension in the past, only to see it overrun by the dark, has been played out in microcosm in this lifetime. And so you've been given expectations that have been dashed, you might say, as this is played out in microcosm. Now, you might consider that this has a connection to what I was talking about earlier with regard to prophecy, and indeed that is so. But here is an example where there is not the understanding of prophecy in that way, but rather the necessity, if you will, to respect the processes of the cycles. And this is how the cycles work. So on one level you have expected it, but in truth it was never going to be with you before now. And of course it means that the processes of preparation between now and the end of the year don't quite fit in with your expectations, and you have been forced to release the picture of how that might look. And all of this is about learning to let go, which has been a challenge for humanity for a long time. And so really, there is this process of preparation, and you are in truth beginning to see it, or should I say, not beginning, but have been witnessing for some time the unfolding of all of this. You've been told that those who wish to control humanity will believe they are about to achieve their objectives only to have it snatched from their grasp. And you are beginning to see this. Those who wish to control humanity believe they are on the cusp of achieving it. And in a sense, that is true. But it will be snatched from their grasp, and they will be exposed, and indeed that exposure has begun. Humanity has begun to awaken and to question and to say no to those who wish to exercise that control. Their web of control is becoming more evident, more obvious. And so this is part of the preparation, because humanity needs to recognize what is happening and, in one sense, choose. So this is part of what is unfolding. And, of course, the key moment in all of this preparation, you might say, is that December 21st solstice, where energies will come forth that will transform all things on this planet, all particles, whether they be rocks or molten lava or energies or indeed animals or human beings. The nature of the particles will change with those energies, and those that have not prepared will not survive, as been told to you. So that is really the first event. And there are there are forms of preparation which will go on between that solstice and the March equinox of 2013. And I do not intend to spell these out. But if you think about it, there is that change in the nature of the particles, and there is the planned activation of the human DNA at the end of this year. And as you might imagine, these two changes will cause a significant shift in perspective, you might say, of those that remain. And so, in a sense, it will be a time of acclimation. Not really acclimation, acclimatization. So that, in a sense, those that remain will be prepared for that dimensional shift that will come forth at the March equinox. And it is difficult to describe what that transition will be like, other than to say that the experience of the human being of themselves will be very different indeed as a result of that process. You will be moving, as you understand it, to the angelic dimension. You will have all of your over 2,000 DNA strands activated. You will reconnect with your monad in ways that at this stage you cannot imagine. You will readily communicate with other expressions of consciousness, other beings, in the manner that these two do, but more so. And you will reawaken the connection that all beings have back to their creator in the center of the cosmos. This connection is part of what has been lost for humanity since the fall in Atlantis. Other beings have the ability, have the opportunity to communicate with all there is continuously if they choose, certainly at will. And that will be re-established, and you cannot begin to imagine what that experience is like until you are reawakened to it. And so there is a wondrous shift awaiting you all. And you will not leave behind all that you have in this dimension. It is not as if you turn up upon the new earth with nothing. Yes, the new earth will be, in a sense, pristine, but it is not as if you will not have the housing of your choice, for example. And so, on some levels, life will look quite similar, and it will take a little time for people to realize the nature of the shift which has occurred. So, it is not something that, in a sense, every individual human needs to prepare for. There are those beings that are doing that preparation, and there are those who will trigger the ascension process when the time is right. And when it is triggered, all those that remain upon the planet will participate. Their macabres will be activated, because this is the vehicle for that process. And they simply need to be here for all this to occur. So some are teaching the necessity of complex understandings of sacred geometry and so on. But I will say to you that choosing to participate in this process is really all the individual needs to do. Acknowledge their creator and choose to participate in this process. And one way or another, the rest will be dealt with. So this is the best that I can give you at this time.
What a beautiful and complete answer. Thank you. We do appreciate it. Now we're going to go to line two, where Helen is waiting for us. Helen, welcome. And your question.
Yes. Yes, my question is, Mrs. Casey, you were talking about a template and life experience before previous lives. So when we have all the DNA fully activated and applied to our full potential, will our skills, like we have accumulated from the past lifetimes, also activated, or all the skills, knowledges we learned in previous times have to be reawakened, relearned?
Richard, did you hear that question?
Yes. It is perhaps a little of both. Your skills and abilities to a large degree are deeply entangled with your memories. And so as your memories return, your, let us say, ability to tap into your skills and abilities will explode. That does not mean that instantly you will have all of those abilities available to you. Rather, you will need to go through a level of training, but your ability to reawaken those skills will be very rapid. And so you might consider, if one looked at playing the piano, for example, how one has a child prodigy, where a young child displays enormous abilities to play the piano. Now, that does not come forth normally without that child being drawn to the piano and practicing quite a deal with the piano. And yet, they bring forth a level of skill that is considered disproportionate to the age and the experience. And this is a rather good example of how this will unfold. Indeed, some of those so-called child prodigies have come to understand in some form that they, in fact, are a reincarnation of someone who's had those skills in a past life. And so it will be rather like this. You will still need to undertake a form of training, a level of training, but the skills will reemerge quickly. You might look at this a little like how Carolyn has brought forth her channeling skills. She has done this pretty much in every lifetime that she has come forth. And so these skills were not immediately available to her. She had to go through a training process to bring them forth. But as they've come forth, anyone that has witnessed them will understand the breadth and power and sophistication of those skills. So this is, for me, a good example of how this will unfold.
Thank you for your question. Thank you for your question, Helen. We're moving along because we have other people with questions, but thank you. And thank you, Richard and Mr. Casey. We're going to go to line one where Molly is waiting. Welcome, Molly, and your question, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is, I live in Arizona, and I recently did a soulmate meditation, and in it I was told that I was the wife of Geronimo. And I find that very intriguing because most of my friends around me have all had a patchy past lives, and it seems that we are all coming together as one just recently. Can you give me some information on that?
Interesting question, Molly. Richard, I'm assuming you got all that part of the question, did you?
Well, I think so. Now, tell me who Geronimo is.
He was... go ahead, Molly. I'll let you tell him.
Actually, he was an Apache chief born in the 1800s and...
American Indian, Richard.
I got you. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Molly. We're moving on, dear.
Okay.
So your question is, were you the wife of Geronimo, yes?
Yeah.
And are these people of his coming together? Mm-hmm.
There are many threads in what you are asking. It is the case that you were the wife of Geronimo in that lifetime. And it is also the case that many of those who have been drawn to Arizona in particular are individuals who lived lives as what you call American Indians. And so there are a number that
are reconnecting in the way that you are sensing. And this is not restricted to American Indian groups. Indeed, it is happening in many forms across the planet. Indeed, it is something that occurs quite regularly anyway. It is not something which is specific to this time, though it is happening more intensely at this time. Souls with common backgrounds and common journeys very often incarnate together to work together and to extend their joint soul experiences. And this is more common with two or three people, but can also occur with larger groups. So it is not such an unusual phenomenon.
Thank you for your question, Molly.
Okay, I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You're welcome, dear. And we only have 3 minutes, actually 2 minutes now. And I am sorry that we can't take on more of the questions of people who are on the line. There just is not enough time. An hour passes by so quickly. We only have a couple minutes, Richard. We would like to, I know you would like to thank Mr. Casey for his most beautiful and complete answers to our questions. And we all appreciate the service. Did he have any last, we have 3 minutes. Did he have any last statement that he might wish to make?
I think he might. I want to take this last opportunity to firstly thank all of you that have come forth to connect with me in this way. And I will say to you that the unfolding of events in your world is quite fascinating at this time. It is a time of momentous change on so many levels, and it is exciting to witness. But I would simply say to all of you that to have faith, to trust the choices that you are making, to recognize that in choosing to participate in these changes, to participate in ascension, is the essential thing you need to do. Do not be fearful that you might have missed something, that you might have missed a choice. The key issue is that, yes, many of you have missions that you need to in some way activate, and it is valuable where you are drawn to those to move forward with these things. But for most people, it is simply a matter of choosing to participate. And I sense there is no one listening to this call for whom this does not apply. And so it is.
Again, thank you for that ending message. Richard, we have 1 minute, dear. Do you wish to bring forth something in 1 minute?
Oh, well, no, just to say thank you. Thank you to Mr. Casey for his contribution. And to you, Carolyn, for making all of this possible. I will say that something that Carolyn and I have been working on this last week or so has been the first of the family soul origin and history readings. And I tell you, it has just been fascinating, truly fascinating, the material that has come forth in that reading. Coming forth, Carolyn is bringing it forth from universal consciousness, and the content of that is mind-blowing. Just so exciting.
Indeed, it has been. So I also wish to thank Mr. Casey and you, Richard. You always say, I make it possible, but my dear, you do too. Without you, there would be nothing along these lines. And I would like to thank those at BBS Radio who take care of us and push the right buttons, so to speak, keep us on the air, and keep everything working. Thank you, too. And until the next time, we are with you, beloved ones, and love all of you. Goodbye for now.
Bye for now, everyone.